You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Welcome. School starts at LAUSD in less than 2 weeks. Now, there were hopes, many, many hopes, at the end of the last school year that with vaccinations at full throttle, COVID would be on the run. Things would start to get back to normal. But in LA County, the grand reopening isn't going exactly as planned.
With transmission continuing to rise, we do remain very concerned about low levels of vaccination among our Black residents and other teens and young adults.
Dr. Barbara Ferrer directs the LA Department of Public Health.
You can see that the groups with the highest rates of transmission, hospitalization, and deaths continue to have the lowest levels of vaccination.
And there's the rub. Not enough people are vaccinated, and the unvaxxed have the highest and most serious cases. The numbers have jumped in recent weeks, and if California were still using that tier-based system for lifting COVID restrictions, remember that? The county would be purple, currently in the most restrictive one. So let's get an update on how things are going in Southern California at the schools and at the hospitals. Aviva Alvarez-Zaxson, or Ms. Z, as she's known by her students, teaches world history and ethnic studies at Hamilton High off of Robertson near the 10 freeway. Welcome back, Aviva.
Thanks for having me again.
And Erin McIntosh is a rapid response nurse at Riverside Community Hospital in the Inland Empire, a local union steward of SEIU 121. Erin, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
We've had you both on the show before talking about what's going on, and here we go again. I'm going to start with you, Erin, because it feels like things are ramping up fairly quickly. When did you start seeing this increase in COVID patients, the most recent increase, and those patients coming back into your hospital?
I would say probably this past week, and maybe the week before, it doubled. And it seems to be a little different this time. They're younger patients.
Like how young?
The youngest, 27, but I think they're mostly my age. I'm 38 years old.
Oh, it's terrible. Are you seeing cases where people who are vaccinated are in the hospital as well?
Yes, that is happening too. And it seems to be the older group that are fully vaccinated and they're still contracting COVID, although they seem to be fighting it a little better. So we just had an 85-year-old woman who fully vaccinated and she got COVID and she was requiring oxygen. Thankfully, she made it out of the ICU, and she's requiring less oxygen, so that's a win for us.
Right. She's not intubated, and had she been unvaccinated or had it been a year ago, what would her outcome likely be?
It would have not been a good outcome. Almost 100% imminent death. Ugh. I'm 1,000% sure that the vaccine is helping a little bit.
Aviva, Hamilton High, which is where you teach, is part of LA Unified Schools. You've got exactly, 2 weeks from yesterday, before kids are back in your classroom. In-person instruction is still on for the coming school year. So talk about that, your anxiety, trepidation, excitement, whatever it may be. What are your feelings going in?
Definitely the first feeling that comes in is anxiety to start off, just because I haven't interacted with 200 human beings in a day since 2020. So that already provides a certain level of anxiety. And then on top of that, everything that at least I've had access to when it comes to our return plan has been very family centered, which I totally understand and support. Our families need to feel like they know what's going on, but I have really no idea what my classroom will physically look like. Am I supposed to social distance these students? Will we have full rosters, or are a significant number of our students opting for the online program? And then on top of that, I don't feel invincible. I feel, regardless of being vaccinated, I'm starting to feel more and more vulnerable and trying to be excited for the sake of, you know, putting on that face.
It's perfectly understandable that you have that trepidation, because you teach high school students. Mm-hmm. So they're all above the age of 12, right, who can get the vaccine. Will you know who has the vaccine and who doesn't?
I have a sense that I will doubt that I will know, the same way I don't know for sure which of my students got the chickenpox vaccine or got their MMRs and things like that. So I think the assumption is like you kind of hope that like everyone did, but I won't know. And I, you know, I think it's always safe to assume, considering from your soundbite earlier, the populations of people that are under vaccinated are the teenagers, young adults, and our Black and Latinx communities. They have had, for multitudes of reasons, not been getting vaccinated at the same rates as our other communities. So I have reason to feel a little bit concerned.
What are you hearing from the leadership over at LAUSD and from the administrators there at Hamilton High School about how they're planning to handle this?
That it will be the top-notch level of safety and that we are taking all precautions necessary and a lot of emphasis on testing. It makes me feel like, oh, there is a plan, but there's not a lot on the just like that general sense of dread and like anxiety that comes with all of this. It's not a very human approach. It's a very brightly colored pamphlet, but I'm not feeling held, and I'm not feeling taken care of in an emotional sense.
Not feeling held. Tell me how they solve that. What do you want them to do?
To equate with the hospital, like you walk into a hospital and sometimes you feel like you're just filling up paperwork, and then every so often you get an awesome nurse that comes over and says, hey, are you okay? That kind of feeling, that feeling of being taken care of, like there's a human behind this.
You want a little personal attention.
Yeah, and I know that's tough. Like that would be really, really hard because everyone needs something different.
Yeah.
But that's where we're kind of at.
Ooh, yeah. Aaron, we know that this Delta variant is more contagious. I mean, the CDC says as contagious or maybe even more than the chicken pox, which it can be hard, I suspect, to grasp how contagious. But I want to play for you this cut again from Dr. Barbara Ferrer, who spoke about it last week.
The science on this variant shows that it is different from earlier variants of COVID. It replicates faster and more efficiently in respiratory tract cells, which means that infected people may now spread up to 1,000 times more virus particles with every cough, sneeze or shout than they did a year ago. They may also spread virus efficiently 2 days earlier in their illness course than did people who were infected a year ago.
1,000 times more virus particles than a year ago with every cough and sneeze or shout. That sounds scary.
Yeah, it does sound scary. But like I said before, I mean, we're nowhere near the levels that we were in December and January. I have to touch a little bit on what Aviva was speaking about, you know, feeling anxious and scared. The mental health of our healthcare workers, we are not okay. We were just barely starting to recover from that huge surge that we saw in the winter. A lot of darkness and death. And, you know, we got to a point where we thought, okay, we're going to be okay. Like maybe we've reached herd immunity. And now to hear that it's more contagious and it's coming back and we're starting to actually see it. It's definitely PTSD, I have to tell you. And it's harder this time around because it's people that are my age, like I said before, and they're a little different. The patients are a little bit, they don't believe in COVID and they don't have the same trust for healthcare professionals that they did the last time around. And even, you know, we've had a patient in critical condition telling us, you guys are trying to kill me. COVID's not real. I'm not going to be intubated. I'm going to leave this hospital.
Ooh.
It's it's hard to hear that it's more contagious. And if this is just the tip of the iceberg, I don't know where we're going to be.
And as a healthcare professional, Aaron, what kind of advice do you have for Aviva, who's got to teach kids who may or may not be vaccinated? And she's concerned and she has this trepidation.
I think that it's important to talk about your frustrations, and I hear you. I think that you deserve a voice at the table when it comes to your administrators that are making the rules. And sometimes when we had, you know, our frustrations at the beginning when we were running out of PPE, it helped a lot to talk amongst our colleagues. I would say do your research and wear a mask and try your best to just keep your distance if you're able to.
Aviva, how's that sound?
That sounds like nicer than the pretty pink flyers that go around sometimes. You know, to hear the just compassion behind the voice as opposed to the list of what is being done or what needs to be done. That just reminds me to be grateful that I have union representation, that I do feel like our voices were at the table. I guess like the compounding anxiety being that this isn't over and we know it's going to continue to impact our students, how are we going to hold all of that while reminding them to cover their nose with their mask?
It sounds like a little bedside manners in order, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something you give, Erin, and I want to thank you for it. Over at Riverside Community Hospital, Erin McIntosh, a rapid response nurse there, local union steward, and Aviva Alvarez-Zaxson, world history and ethnic studies teacher over at Hamilton High. To you both, thank you so much and stay strong, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, as teachers and nurses are busy handling this surge in COVID cases, scientists are trying to figure out just how bad things could get. Some states like Louisiana and Florida are seeing numbers at all-time highs for infections right now. But what about here in Los Angeles? Could the Delta variant cause another terrible surge like we saw over the winter? Joining us now to discuss that is Karen Michaels. She heads up the Department of Epidemiology for the Fielding School of Public Health over at UCLA. Welcome to you.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Let's start, if you wouldn't mind, by comparing the rates right now to what they were during the last big spike back in December and January. We remember that, obviously. LA County is currently reporting an average. It's somewhere around 2,800, maybe a little bit more than that, of new coronavirus cases a day. There are more than 1,000 people hospitalized all across the county. Those numbers are way higher than they were just a month ago. We were averaging, what, 200, I think, in early June. How do they compare to the winter surge, though?
Well, I think we are in a different situation because a little more than half of the population is fully vaccinated. So what we are seeing, first of all, is while we are seeing a rapid rise in cases, these cases oftentimes are not as severe, and we have less hospitalization and deaths as we had before. While the vaccinated people are much more protected than the unvaccinated people, they can still get infected. That's not new, but it may be a little bit more with the Delta variant here. But still, I don't think we are getting into a situation that is getting out of control.
And let's make it clear, out of control is hospitalizations, right? Overwhelming the healthcare system.
That is correct.
Do you think will we see the numbers like we saw in the wintertime? Is it possible that we see those, you know, 16, 20, 22,000 a day?
It's possible, and it's under our control. So if we behave accordingly, getting as many people still vaccinated who are still unvaccinated, and using masks and social distancing and maintaining that, I think we can prevent the numbers that we've seen before. I think it's unlikely that we see these very high numbers because we have a large part of the population fully vaccinated, more than half of the population. But you never know with this virus. It's a very clever virus, and we really need to use all the weapons that we have at the moment to combat this virus.
I mean, as you mentioned, this variant is highly contagious. We're starting to hear more and more about breakthrough cases. I mean, these are folks getting infected despite being fully vaccinated. I know several people who have gotten COVID despite being vaccinated. What's going on there from an epidemiological standpoint?
So as I mentioned, the Delta variant is much more contagious. It's about sixfold higher contagious than the original coronavirus. That's why we're seeing these spikes. But nevertheless, in vaccinated people, it might only cause very mild disease, and that's the good news. So while there can be breakthrough infections, if they happen, they are mild, and that is what really counts.
If you're vaccinated and live with someone who's vaccinated but elderly or maybe has pre-existing health conditions, what precautions should you be taking?
So vaccinated and vaccinated is probably a good thing. I think the higher risk is if a vaccinated person meets an unvaccinated person. But if you are both vaccinated, I think the risk of transmission is still very low. Nevertheless, as I mentioned earlier, I think anything we can do to prevent transmission, we should. And the masks are incredibly effective in preventing transmission. So what the CDC is recommending, I think, is a really good idea, wearing masks inside. outside transmission remains low. I think most of the transmission happens indoors. And so wearing masks is a really good idea.
There is talk of needing a booster shot at some point to help protect against the Delta variant. Do you recommend people who were vaccinated, say, a few months ago, go and get another shot?
So there might be looming a booster shot in the future for the elderly and or the immune compromised, because we know that in the elderly, the antibodies decline more rapidly than in younger people. We are still a few months out, I think, from a third shot, but it may be coming in the future.
Could there be other variants that develop as the virus continues to mutate? You know, here we are with Delta. I know we had the Alpha variant. I know there have been the, you know, the South America strain or the South Africa strain or the British strain. I mean, there have been so many. And I wonder, I mean, is it the fact that there are still so many people who are unvaccinated that these variants can develop and the virus can mutate to something even more dangerous?
Absolutely. We are dealing with an extremely clever virus. Remember, none of us has seen a situation like we are in a pandemic like this because we haven't had one for more than 100 years. So given that this virus is so clever, of course we could have even more dangerous variants. That said, the best prevention of new variants developing is vaccination. So if the population was fully vaccinated, the virus would have little chance to mutate. So what we can do is vaccinate a large proportion of the population, as many as we can, to reduce the risk of further variants.
What about the long-term health effects for some people? You know, long-termers, people who have residual effects of COVID. What are you seeing out there?
This is not unusual with infectious diseases, but of course we have a lot of people infected with a virus, more than we usually see with viruses that go around. So we also see more cases of what we call COVID long. This, of course, is disturbing, and it speaks again to the need to get people vaccinated. And we hear stories over and over again from people who get COVID who were unvaccinated, how much they regret not having been vaccinated.
Because the virus is less severe. It doesn't affect you as severely if you're vaccinated as if you were not vaccinated.
It doesn't affect you as severely, and you're less likely to have COVID long, and you're less likely, of course, to get hospitalized or die.
Have you changed your own behaviors just in the past few weeks because of the rise in numbers, just because of the transmissibility of the Delta variant?
I've always been a big fan of the masks to protect others and myself, but I'm even more conscientious in wearing the masks, especially in situations where there are crowds. So even if I'm outdoors in a crowd, I am sure to wear my mask.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us and talking about this, you know, from an epidemiological standpoint. Karen Michaels, professor of epidemiology over at UCLA, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, one place where there are a lot of armchair doctors and scientists is in the County of Orange. Since the beginning of the pandemic, OC supervisors have been getting an earful from folks railing against masks and vaccines. But last week, things got really ugly. with awful racist comments even being thrown at the board's chair, Andrew Doe. A warning, this soundbite is offensive.
Mr. Doe, going on in your country right now in Vietnam is 4,000 little kids who are in quarantine camps away from their parents because of this fake scamdemic. And you come to my country and you act like one of these communist parasites, I ask you to go the f*** back to Vietnam.
Lord, now it seems like the board has had enough and is limiting public comments. LA Times commentator, columnist Gustavo Arellano's here. He's here every week with the Orange County Line, and he joins us right now. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Good Lord. All right. It's one thing to question the science behind COVID vaccines and mask wearing, but what that guy said in public on video is just deplorable. And the crowd, that's the shocking part about it, is the crowd actually cheered. Is more of this kind of, you know, xenophobia, racism, is that being thrown around maybe also at other Asian American public officials in Orange County? It does have a large Vietnamese population, after all.
Yeah, first and foremost, of course, this is Orange County, California. This is a place where xenophobia is part of the county religion one way or another. And of course, we're in the wake of anti-Asian violence and just rhetoric against all Asian Americans in the United States because of this whole COVID thing that's happening. But what the word said to Chairman Doe, who's the chair of the Board of Supervisors, is pretty unprecedented, especially in the past couple of decades, as Vietnamese have actually joined the Republican Party, as they've become party brokers, so to speak, and won elections. I can't remember something this noxious said against even Vietnamese in public, geez, since the 1980s, really, back when they were still, a lot of them were coming in as refugees.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Doe is a liberal Democrat pushing for, you know, all kinds of mask mandates. He's a pretty conservative Republican, right?
Yeah, he's actually been pretty good on this COVID, on the Orange County's response to COVID. A lot of people say he could have been better. I personally think he could have been better as well. But he's not as bad as, say, his colleague, Don Wagner, or their former colleague, Michelle Steele, who's now a congresswoman in Orange County. So if you're not that criticism is ever particularly warranted, like that noxiousness, but if you're going to go against, I'm assuming the person who said that, well, who knows what that person, who I'm not going to make any assumptions about him except the first three letters of that word.
What has been the response there in Orange County to these kinds of attacks? And why do people think that they're happening now? Or maybe this has always gone on?
Well, what's going on in Orange County Board of Supervisors, you have this very active contingent of people exercising their First Amendment rights, yes, but being complete boors about it, being jerks, and just getting more and more noxious and more just out there. Like, again, criticizing Chairman Doe, oh, your country. No, Chairman Doe's country is the United States. And if this guy who by the way, named himself after a fictional character, so that's all you have to know about who that person is. If he actually paid attention to Doe, he'd realize, like, you know, Doe has been an upstanding citizen of the United States for a long time. So, of course, there's been a lot of criticism. Also, you're getting now strange bedfellows where you're getting liberal Asian American politicians say, yeah, I actually have never agreed with Andrew Doe on anything, but definitely for this, I'm going to stand in solidarity with him and say racism is just, it's always unacceptable, but especially when you're trying to do your job as a public official to protect the public.
Now the supervisors are being criticized for limiting public comment periods. In what way?
First and foremost, can you blame them on one hand because of this? No one should, though it is a First Amendment right, no one should be subject to abuse like that. But what's been going on is now that the Board of Supervisors is meeting in person, allowing people from the public to also go in there, like, no more, we've had enough. And the only person who's saying, like, no, we should allow this to happen is the newest supervisor, Katrina Foley. And she tried to bring it up, and ironically enough, Chairman Doe shut her down.
What's been the response from other supervisors? They're all on board with this limitation?
They voted for it. They haven't said anything to the media. Supervisor Foley points out that other cities like Santa in Orange County, they still allow this form of public comment. For me, it's like, hey, look, it's a public comment. And you're going to say, oh, well, at what point do we stop? And do we start allowing Facebook comments or whatnot? But I think, you know, when you go to the Board of Supervisors meeting, you have to fill out a form. You can't just stand up and yell. You'll be escorted out. So you fill out the form. The way I see is if you submit these emails, you should read them. Why not? There is no, you know, there's no hurt in that. And if they're noxious and whatnot, then so be it.
How are other cities in the OC handling this, Gustavo?
Yeah, again, like in Santana, they're still allowing it because let's not forget, as your previous guest just mentioned, we're in the midst of a rise in the Delta variant. And especially when you get these people who go to the Board of Supervisors meetings without masks, railing against scandemics, plandemics and whatnot, you really think a good citizen is going to want to be in that pit of pathogens, possibly? Oh, wow, that's a lot of alliteration. Sorry.
Alliteration from anxious anchors. Seeking powerful
exactly.
Right. Gustavo Arellano, columnist with the LA Times, here every week with KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
All right. That's it for us today. Tomorrow, with a big dip in ridership, LA Metro really wants you to ride their trains and buses, but maybe you're reluctant to do that in the middle of a pandemic. What can they do to get their numbers back up? That's on the next episode of GLA. Online always at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Catherine Barnes, Jackie Sedley, Jenna Cagle, Reg Warna, Sue Margulies, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl, all instrumental on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your ears tonight, and have a great night.